Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're talking with Judith Finlinson about her new book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate. Judith, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
This book focuses on the generation effects of diet and experiences. What made you decide to start researching and writing the book?
Well, I got interested in this topic when I was introduced to the work of Dr. David Barker. And David Barker was a British epidemiologist who is doing these large epidemiological studies of Britain and Wales. And he remember this was he started discovering this in the 1970s, and what he was finding was that the rates of heart disease were much higher in the areas of those countries that would be described as impoverished. Now, remember that this was the 1970s. So at that point, people were really seeing heart disease as a disease of affluence. They were linking it with eating too much meat, high cholesterol, and saturated fat. So his evidence was going against the grain of conventional medical wisdom. So he began to look more closely at this, and he started to suspect that it was really rooted in something that was going on during pregnancy, because he was seeing one of the most compelling statistics he was seeing was that the link, their maternal mortality could be linked to high rates of stroke 70 years later. So to him, that was showing a line between something that was going on in pregnancy when women were more vulnerable to dying from pregnancy and stroke when people had reached adulthood. Or even that may have been a second generation of people. So he began to look more closely into that, and he was turning up databases like the Dutch Hunger Winter, and that is a period during the Second World War when Holland was closed off, Germany closed off the borders of Holland, and the people in northern Holland were basically starving. I mean, you've probably seen stories on it. They were eating tulip bulbs because they didn't have enough to eat. And that gave him, that was the second major database that he looked at. But that gave him evidence that women who had been famished during pregnancy produced offspring that were twice as likely to suffer from type 2 diabetes and more likely to be obese and to suffer from heart disease. And so these metabolic influences or diseases were very linked to what happened in the womb. And that became the basis of a huge, they gradually found more and more birth cohorts and built on this information and became the basis of what is known as the developmental origins of health and disease. And that's an entirely relatively new and large body of science. And what surprises me as a journalist is that so few people know about this. It's been around. Dr. Barker published the Barker Hypothesis in The Lancet in 1986. People thought he was crazy for till about the year 2000, and then in the year 2000, serious epidemiologists in the U.S. said, you know what, he's not crazy. This is true. It's turning up in our studies when we start looking at it. And he was invited to speak to the National Institutes of Health. So it's been acknowledged as being sound science for 20 years, and yet very, very few people know about it. And as far as I know, there are very few public health programs being put in based on this evidence.
There isn't anything you can do retroactively about what your grandparents ate. Are there things that people can do to combat the issues that they're going to face?
Yes. So that the bad news is, you're right, you can't change what your grandparents ate, or the stress that they experienced, which is another whole issue, and adverse childhood experiences, trauma, those kinds of things. But you can, what happens, what we now know, is that what was happening in the womb, and Dr. Barker certainly didn't know this when he started his research, although he was around to really see it start coming into play, is that one of the things that happens is that experiences like poor nutrition have an impact on how the fetus develops. It leaves biological memories and affects the epigenome. And the epigenome is the area of your genes. It's not your genes. Your genes are fixed. But your genes operate in an environment known as the epigenome, and basically impacts like nutrition, like prolonged stress. The analogy that people use is turn up or turn down the volume on how your genes express themselves. So you want your genes to be expressing themselves in a healthy way, and we now know that improving nutrition, for example, that's the key one that they've done studies in, can really improve the expression of genes that would contribute to some of these illnesses like stroke, heart disease, type 2 diabetes. And one of the most famous, probably the most famous study, was a study known as the Agouti Mouse Study, which was done in 1998. And Agouti mice were pet mice, or are pet mice, that were bred to be very, very beautiful. They have gorgeous orange coats. But the researchers or scientists or people were noticing that the more beautiful these mice were, the younger they were more likely to die. And so a group of researchers started feeding these mice very specific nutrients, mostly vitamins and a couple of other things. And they found not only could they improve the health and longevity of the very beautiful agouti mice, but those mice produced offspring without further supplementation, those offspring and their offspring's offspring were healthy. So that comes back to your grandparents. Your grandparents may have been the sick agouti mice, and we don't know exactly because that's a very specific study using specific nutrients, but we do know, we have a number of studies that indicate that lifestyle adaptations can improve gene expression and improve various pathways connected with a lot of diseases like heart disease and stroke.
And on that note, we need to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Nothing protects your health like Health Matters.
Are you saying Health Matters protects your health like nothing at all?
No, but...
Because it sounded like you said Health Matters is the same as nothing.
What about our up-to-the-moment news and commentary?
That's nothing to me. It's pointless and annoying.
Okay. Nothing is pointless and annoying like Health Matters. Ask your doctor if Health Matters is right for you.
Tune in to Health Matters Saturday mornings at 10 and Sunday mornings at 6 on Morehead State Public Radio.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Judith Finlinson to talk about her new book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate. Judith, thanks again for being on the show. I'm interested in learning about the effects in Appalachia. I feel like people in the region were isolated, and I would imagine that people from the region would experience kind of the same things across the board. What did your research tell you about that?
Well, that's a very good assessment. With Appalachia, that is part of an area of the United States known as the Stroke Belt. And Dr. Barker actually got interested in the Stroke Belt because, as I mentioned earlier, his very early research that got him thinking about these things was linking high rates of maternal mortality and infant mortality with the rate of strokes 70 years later. Appalachia is part of an area of the United States that is known as the Stroke Belt, and it has intrigued epidemiologists for decades because research based on that region indicates that the vulnerability to stroke is firmly rooted in birth and early life, i.e. people who leave the Stroke Belt and move still keep their risk of stroke, a higher risk of stroke wherever they go. So Dr. Barker got interested in this area, and because when he began to look at it, what he saw is that the area had endured long cycles of social and economic disruption that began with the Civil War. And he recognized that the generations of poverty and stress that characterized the Stroke Belt were having an impact on women's ability to bear healthy children. Remember, I talked about those epigenetic modifications that impact on fetal development. He didn't know that was actually how it was happening. He was just seeing what was happening. And he was seeing that poor nutrition and other stresses were affecting women in ways that undermined their ability to survive childbirth and produce robust babies. So higher rates of maternal mortality and higher rates of infant mortality than the norm. So when you step back and look at what's going on, even before you get to the epigenetic explanation of it, you can see that from a very simplistic point of view, malnutrition undermines a pregnant woman's ability to cope with the physical demands of pregnancy. So the higher rates of infant mortality, I mean, if she's not well-fed, she's not well-nourished, she's chronically stressed. And then you get to the impact on the fetus. So women who are poorly nourished themselves can't meet the nutritional needs of a developing fetus. So the wisdom, you provide your body with nutrients, and the fetus draws off the percentage of those nutrients that it needs for healthy development. But if, A, it's not getting enough of those nutrients, then the theory is it will draw them from the mother's reserves. But if the mother is part of a group that's endured long cycles of poverty and malnourishment, she doesn't have those reserves. So the most likely thing that is going to happen in this very undernourished pregnancy that we're talking about is possibly the mother will die because her body will not be strong enough to actually deliver a baby. Possibly the baby will die because it's not nourished enough to be viable. Or the most likely thing is that the baby will be born with a low birth weight. And a low birth weight is at 5 pounds, 8 ounces or less. And that is a marker that has been linked with, and Dr. Barker was the one who originally identified this, with much higher rates of chronic illness, like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and stroke than the norm.
Because people know so much more about proper nutrition now, are we seeing things start to turn around?
I wish we were seeing it turn around, but we're not, because what we're seeing still with poverty, let's just focus in on poverty and nutrition. We know that impoverished people are much more likely to have diets that are very, very high in processed foods. So what you're getting, when I was talking about the Dutch hunger winter, where you have the effects of famine, so we're not getting people who are actually starving in terms of being famished, but what experts are describing in the standard, as a result of the standard American diet, which is very high in processed foods, and a much higher consumption of processed foods related with poverty, is something called high-calorie malnutrition. And so you're right back to the same dynamic that I was talking about in terms of the stroke belt, which is poorly nourished mothers not being able to produce healthy enough babies to avoid chronic illness.
I have a friend who's very conscious about what she eats, and often she'll say, there's no food in that food. But I don't think people really consider the impact on what they're eating will have on future generations.
No, but we've now had, so if you take this dynamic of the stroke belt, which David Barker was looking at as a kind of focused group, what we're now seeing in the U.S. is that dynamic spread more broadly thanks to the effects of the standard American diet, which has been around for three generations. So one of the experts in this area, Kent Thornburg, who wrote the foreword to my book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate, now talks about the 100-year effect. And that he really goes back to the effect that let's just stick with the standard American diet and high quality high calorie malnutrition has on. So you have a woman who's pregnant. If she's pregnant with a daughter, those eggs are forming while that daughter is still a fetus. If she's eating largely the standard American diet, which is high-calorie malnutrition, or as your friend says, no nutrients in that food, those eggs are not going to be as robust as they should be at best. So she grows up to be a woman who is pregnant with eggs that are not as robust. If she continues to eat the standard American diet, which is extremely low in nutrients, she's perpetuating that cycle. And we now have three generations of that. Kent Thornburg says very clearly, is tied to the runaway rates of chronic illness that we're seeing in the United States. And if we could just step back and regroup and start ensuring that pregnant women have nutritious diets, we would go a long way toward resolving these issues. David Barker did at least one study that showed that a generation... If we fed pregnant women a nutritious diet in one generation, we could reduce the rates of type 2 diabetes by 50%. So that's a pretty compelling statistic.
How do you get the word out to make sure people know about this? I feel like no one knows about this.
Well, nobody does know it, which is why I'm so pleased to be talking to you, because it's been around for a long time. And, you know, we need to look at public health initiatives to resolve these issues. Because, you know, the good news is that we have evidence that we can fix this. And Finland is a case in point. We were talking about the stroke belt and the social disruption and so on, and Finland has a history of social disruption, largely due to various wars and terrible health. But it also has a long tradition of public health programs that address these concerns. And some of these are specifically directed toward improving the health and well-being of women and children. So to go back, during the early part of the 20th century, the rates of maternal and infant mortality in that country were really sky high. And in fact, when I was doing the check on the book, I had that statistic, and I thought, I must have made a mistake. That's so high, it can't be right. And I went back and double-checked it, and I was right. They were really alarming. But today, Finland has among the lowest rates of maternal mortality in the world, about 3 maternal deaths per 1,000 live births and 2.5 babies out of 1,000 births. And the United States, the rate of maternal mortality, as I'm sure you know, has been rising. I think it's 5.4 now. It's the highest in any industrialized country. So in Finland, they began to look at resolving these problems in about 1934 when they established child welfare clinics in Helsinki. And in 1938, they introduced the world-famous Baby Box program, and you've probably heard of that, which was introduced with the goal of reducing the number of infant deaths. And initially, that program was directed toward women living on a low income, but it was so well-received that they expanded it, about 50 years ago or so to include all mothers. That initiative is credited with helping Finland achieve one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world. They also have a strong public health system, which played a role. And within that public health system, they have a serious commitment to prenatal care. And they have prenatal clinics across the country where pregnant women and children can obtain advice, always free of charge, and they really educate them about healthy eating, which they highlight not only in the prenatal stage, but then they follow through in well baby clinics after the baby is born. And they follow those kids and they really promote healthy eating. So that is a model that works and that we can use. And so it's not like you have to sort of start from scratch and dreaming up what you might do to counteract some of these problems.
Sadly, that's all the time we have here today on Open Mic. Judith Finlinson talking about her new book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Morehead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.